Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. I'm your host, Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with my dear friend and yours, Mr. Peter Marsh. Pete, how are you?
Hey, man, I am doing great. I love being on your show, and I think it's been a while. What was the last thing that we covered together?
Masters Universe. So that would have been like in June.
Oh, of course. Okay. Actually, it hasn't been that long then.
It's been a long summer. I don't know if for you, but it's been a long summer for me, man. This is one of the worst summers I've had in my life.
Oh, do you want to elaborate on that or is it too personal?
No, it's not too personal. Just work stuff. Work a really hard time at work. I'm also just not a summer guy. I don't like the heat. I sweat very easily because I take Prozac, which fucks up your brain's ability to like figure out how hot you really are or some shit. It's a side effect of Prozac. So I sweat very easily. So just like it was a hot as hell summer. Anyway, and then you get into climate change. So anyway, it was a shitty summer. It felt like the never ending summer.
Yeah. It's weird because, I mean, and this might kind of tie into what we're talking about today, but like all the difficulties that I've had in life for the first half of my life, maybe even the first 75%, I've sat there thinking like, okay, well, the world works. There's issues. The world works. But I'm the one that has the problem. And then, like, before COVID happened, there was this shift. And now it's like, oh, I have problems. I still need to work on them. But then the world itself is so inherently flawed and problematic, you know?
I know.
And it's tough reconciling because, like, you know, you try to look for, like, where there's hope. And, you know, now it feels like it's very hard to find.
I agree with you. And I'm concerned more and more, even outside of the Trump of it all, I'm concerned more and more about climate. You know, we're living through it now. It's not like, it's coming. It's actually happening now. And we're constantly breaking records. There's constantly natural disasters in places that never had them before. But, you know, I think about Mr. Rogers. Right. He said, look at the helpers. You know, there are good people. It just the internet takes the worst voices and amplifies them. And also capitalism does that so it could continue the illusion that there's as many Republicans as there are Democrats, which is just not the truth. But most of us are decent people.
Yes.
But that does lead us into our conversation because we're talking about the film Dark Star from 1974, and you had texted me earlier this week that you said you found it very nihilistic.
Yes.
All right, I want to know that take, but first let me say, so Dark Star's from 1974, it's the first film directed by John Carpenter. Have you ever heard of him? His next film was Halloween. It's co-written by John Carpenter and Dan O'Bannon, and that's sort of what we're doing here. We're starting a Dan O'Bannon series, maybe? I don't know. We're not that committed to it. We're doing two for the next 2 weeks, and then we might keep going.
Okay.
Dan O'Bannon, can you tell the audience who Dan O'Bannon is?
Yeah. Dan O'Bannon is this really – he's interesting because it's just – he's not a name that you hear – whenever you watch a review show or you see these clip shows of like the best horror movies of all time or the best sci-fi movies of all time. Like, I mean, you might hear his name dropped, but there isn't this sort of reverence for him the way that there is for like John Carpenter or like the people that are around that time, like the other filmmakers, the ones that went to film school. And I remember when I first encountered him, it was when I was watching the Making of Alien documentary. It's, you know, it's called The Beast Within, and it was on the DVD, and it was this great comprehensive documentary on the making of Alien. And it starts off with him talking about the idea of Alien and where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he looks in the interview, he kind of looks like Orville Redenbacher.
Yes.
And so you're sitting there watching this guy talk about like where Alien came from, and it just doesn't like connect. You're like, how does this guy who looks like this,
right?
How did he make Alien? And then when you look him up on IMDb or, you know, Wikipedia or whatever, you see that like he was very involved in like kind of the, like this sort of like almost like this movement of movies that like are really influential on our, you know, frame of mind, like how we perceive movies, how we perceive the world. Like you were just talking about a minute ago, like how bleak the world might seem. And like, I feel like we always focus on Star Wars and George Lucas from this time period and how it influenced our mind and influenced film. But really, Dan O'Bannon's movies really kind of influenced what we think about the world and about film, too.
Yeah, I think that's really well put. And to add to that, so what you mean by Orville Rutterbacher for our younger listeners is he's got like he's very fastidious looking. He's got suspenders and a bow tie, and so you think like he like if you saw him walking down the street, you'd be like, oh, that guy is like the principal of a middle school or something, not the guy who wrote Alien, right?
Right, right.
And you're right. He's not super famous, although he is a name that people talk about. I think one of the reasons why he's not as famous is, despite having such a specific point of view, there's not a lot of like true expressions of his work. Like, I think there's this movie, Dark Star, there's Alien, and then a lot of other stuff that is good. Like, he'll come and say like, oh, I didn't like the way it turned out, or oh, they interfered with me and stuff. And I guess that's the other thing that's interesting about him, which is he was, and you could see it in this film because he's one of the stars of this film. He yeah. was a hippie, and he brings to, you know, dystopian science fiction a weird, like, hippie mindset, or maybe, like, a better way to put it would be, like, the disappointed hippie.
Yep.
Right? Like, you and I did a recording on, for your channel, we did a recording for the Alien, the adapted comic book of Alien. And it had things in it from the original screenplay that had been cut from the movie. And one of the things you and I found interesting was there was a scene where they're talking about Ash being very weird. This is before they figured out that he was a, what do they call him in there? Androids, right?
Android, or cyborgs? Android.
Yeah.
Android.
Yeah, Android. And Ripley's like, hey, have you ever fucked him? And or she just slept with him. And then, I'm sorry, what's the other female character's name?
Oh, Burke? No. Burke is in Aliens.
Whatever. She's like, no, I haven't. But like the way that they talked about it was very casual. And you and I were saying it's as if he, when he was writing it, was imagining a future post-sexual revolution, pre-AIDS epidemic, where just everybody fucked everybody. And I think that's one of the interesting things about his work, because you see that in it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Did you watch any of the making of Return of the Living Dead?
No, because I have to. I couldn't get it for free, so I didn't watch it. I did watch him talking about this film, and I did watch that Alien documentary you sent me.
Okay, excellent, excellent. No, what's interesting about like because in the Return of the Living Dead documentary, he's already died at this point, so he's not one of the talking heads in the documentary, right? But people talk about him, and then when they talk about him, he kind of comes off more like a creep, which was interesting because I didn't think he was a creep when I was watching him be interviewed for Alien. He seemed more like not conservative, but sort of nerdy, right?
Yeah.
And like, you know, when they talk about him in Return of the Living Dead, you know, one of the actresses goes to visit him at his house, like during the casting process, and he's got porn on in his house, and then really? He's got like a gun on the table. And then when you see pictures of him from the making of Return of the Living Dead, he doesn't have his beard, and he's just wearing like a regular t-shirt. So one of the girls they were trying to cast for Return of the Living Dead was a stripper that he knew from a strip club that he would go to. So there's sort of this range where I guess like, yeah, he's a hippie, especially when you look at him in this movie Dark Star. It's like, okay, I know what kind of guy he was like when they were making this movie. But in general, you can tell he's like a gigantic fan of like science fiction books and movies in general, you know, but it's hard to kind of make sense of exactly who he was because I haven't seen that many interviews with him and people don't talk about him as much, you know?
No, it's true. And see, there seems to be varied, accounts of him. And also he might not be a reliable narrator himself.
Yeah.
I do know that, like, he was hard to deal with. Like, Alien, I just said Alien, I think is maybe the biggest, the greatest, purest expression of his work.
Yeah.
But he didn't even want to go to the premiere. He was so mad that they changed things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we were just talking about Ash. I think Ash was not his idea. Mm-hmm. It was the person that he worked with a lot, Schuster? What's his name?
Yeah, Ron Schuster.
Yeah. So, he, you know, like, he seems petty when it comes to, like, oh, you change, you know. He probably could have had a better career in Hollywood if he was less precious about his work, but he seems to be one of the guys that's like, you can't, don't change anything I write.
Yeah.
I mean, it's notable that he never worked with John Carpenter again, despite the long career that he had.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because if we're talking about Dark Star, it sort of seems like this proto John Carpenter movie where, you know, he's so involved. He's made the music. He's the voice, a couple of different characters in the movie. I think Nick Castle, who's like the first Michael Myers, he's credited as the alien in this movie.
That's interesting.
But yeah, but then there's no other collaboration between the two. And so, like, there must have been something going on. But I'm thinking that Dan O'Bannon must have been kind of hot shit in film school, right? Because he did the visual effects for this movie.
Yeah.
He's essentially like the main character. It's like an ensemble movie, but, you know, he has maybe more screen time than the guy that's in charge of the ship.
That's true. And
they definitely gave him, like, the most comedic moments out of the whole movie.
Yes, absolutely. And, like, physical comedy, too.
Yeah.
All the stuff in the elevator stuff.
Yeah. But there's definitely, like, this sort of, like, anti-authoritarian
vibe
that's in this movie, and then, like, it's all over Alien. And I feel like that's, like, where he's coming from.
Yes,
this
exactly.
Sort of, like, you know, our system is so flawed. Like, humanity is a joke. That's kind of like, you know, you're thinking about the future, and there's not this, like, Star Trek future. It's sort of like, oh, no, in the future, like, things are going to get worse. And it's because, like, of corporations, which is just, like, that's why I felt like he was so important to talk about. Because, like, oh, did we just sort of create this future based on, like, watching his movies? Like, oh, we're like, oh, this is what the future is going to be like. And then, you know, now we live in this sort of dystopian technology controlled hellscape.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about what the movie's about. It's called Dark Star, which is the name of the spaceship. It's a sci-fi movie. It's a sci-fi comedy. The Dark Star is a crew. They originally have four people, and then they're down to three when we meet them. Because their commander dies, kind of. I don't know. We can talk about it later. And their job is... This is very Hitchhiker's Guide, I think. Their job is to go around space and to find what they call unstable planets. Planets that are going to lose their orbital pull. Planets that might not... planets that would be a danger to the rest of the system that they're in.
Yeah.
And just blow them up with bombs and destroy them entirely. All for the eventual colonization, which is interesting because you think of colonization as like, oh, we're going to colonize that thing. But the way that these guys are going through space almost kind of randomly gives you an idea that whoever they work for has plans to just colonize all of existence. So their job is essentially to destroy things, to destroy whole planets, which is so interesting because I think it's very important to note this is 1974. So this is 3 years before Star Wars comes out and 6 years after 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yep, that's very important.
And Star Wars, the whole big sin is that they destroy a planet, right? And from what we see here, these aren't inhabited planets, but even that I think is very, to use your word, nihilistic, because it's kind of like space is just empty. It's just nothing in it. There is that one little alien. What do you think? I was going to say another thing here that you see big time in Alien is the idea of these people aren't astronauts. They're not scientists. They're laborers. They're just laborers. They're laborers in space. The way Alien's about, like, basically truck drivers in space.
Yes.
So going into this movie, I'm sure you'd heard the name of this movie for a long time. And I think it wasn't available to recently. It's right now, it's on the Criterion Channel. Did I watch it on the Criterion Channel? It might not be anymore. But anyway, I saw it for the first time earlier this year or last year, maybe. What were your initial thoughts about it?
I watched it in segments, and it's just really because of the availability of my schedule, like the time that I was able to watch it. And I'm kind of glad that I watched it in segments because it lags. It's sort of slow to get through. It's funny, but there isn't a like central driving plot.
It's episodic. Like,
there isn't this kind of tension because you're wanting a mystery solved or, you know, there's some kind of crisis that they're facing. There's multiple little crises that they face, but it just sort of kind of seems like, I don't know, like Red Dwarf or something, or like,
it's interesting.
You know, like one of those sort of sci-fi shows that are like comedies, but, you know, they're like a little misadventure in this episode, right? It has that kind of feeling. It just feels like there's like little segments to it. And I didn't think that all of them were funny, but I think it's just a matter of when it was released, right? Because, like, people's sense of humor was slightly different than it is now.
Sure.
And it's just, like, the choices that they make, because it's such an absurd movie in so many different ways. Like, some of the humor is, like, I don't know, so simple and basic and like, childish almost. And then there's this sort of like, oh, this is the kind of humor because, you know, they've read a ton of science fiction and love movies. So it's a little bit of both, but I didn't think it was bad. I just was not like super engaged and excited about it.
Well, you know, for the marketing campaign seemed to use a lot of log lines to try to tie it in, to try to sell it as a way by saying this is similar to something you might know. And one of them was the mission of the Strangelove Generation, which ties it into Stanley Kubrick's work and Dr. Strangelove, which is a very nihilistic comedy. So you see, like, they're trying to tell the audience, but I don't know if this actually went over well. Like, Dan O'Bannon talks about, like, going to the premiere of this and nobody laughing at anything and him being, like, super upset.
Okay, well, then I guess people's sense of humor was more similar to ours back then, and the jokes just sort of didn't hit their mark, you know?
It probably works better now, I think. Because I feel like a lot of millennials have this kind of fucking feeling about the world. Like, yeah, we're probably going to, like, if we went to space, we'd probably just have shitty jobs in space.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you try to think about it in modern terms, it probably feels like a movie that was made by the people that made Psycho Goreman. That company of like special effects artists, and they make really bizarre movies like Manborg, and then they did make this one movie called The Void, which was like actually a dark horror movie. But there's like Psycho Goreman and Manborg, and I know they made something else recently too. And it just probably felt so random, but like the special effects are like simultaneously like they're probably pretty exciting for that time. But then also, like, you know that they're working off of a film student budget, too.
Right. Dan O'Bannon said that originally this was, like, the greatest film, student film you ever saw, and then it became the worst professional film you ever saw.
Right.
When they decided to sell it.
The joke that, like, I just remember, because this was always so associated with Alien. This has just always felt like, oh, this is the sort of, like, the DNA of Alien, or, like, the you know, the stepping stone to Alien is this movie. Like that's the significance of it for the majority of my life, right? But then I got this interest in O'Bannon, and it's like, oh, okay, this is cool. This is like him in film school and like his first feature film too. But like whenever they talk about this movie, whenever you hear it referenced, they're like, oh, that's the movie where like Dan O'Bannon's chasing around a beach ball alien.
Yeah, right? And that isn't a wrong description.
Yeah, it's focusing on one part of the movie where there's a lot more. That's such a brief part of the whole movie.
No, yeah, there's something deeper there. Give me one second, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, man.
Sorry, I DoorDashed some Starbucks.
Oh.
Which is, I did DoorDash for a little while when I needed some extra money. And it's made me think of it like, that's a pretty shitty job. Yeah. These guys are like DoorDash in space. Well, so to your last point, Dan O'Bannon will often say, like, this is the funny version of Alien, or Alien is the scary version of this.
Yes.
There's definitely overlap, but I don't know. Do you think that's like an accurate description?
it's tough to say because, like, it feels like it's in the same genre when it comes to subject matter, but then, like, in tone, it feels completely different. Like, it's got the trappings of Alien, but it doesn't, like, it doesn't have that feel of Alien at all. Like, you know.
No, right.
Yeah.
And it's like, not about the alien. The alien does have a big comedic scene.
Yeah.
But they already have the alien in there. It's right. Not about the alien. If anything, it's about the thing with the bomb, which I think is actually really clever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a trope unto itself of, like, having a sentient, like kind of like grappling with the computer. You know, that's very 2001, where they're dealing with HAL and, like, kind of the idea of,
yes,
like,
a
piece of technology being sentient and how that could be dangerous. Like, that's a thing unto itself. And then, of course, it's like this totally absurd thing where it's like it's a bomb and it's conscious. You know, you're going to blow up a planet with it, but yet you can have a conversation with it. Like, that's a great joke unto itself. But there's not, like, one main thing. Like, I think if there's, like, one main plot point or whatever that goes over the whole thing, it's just that the ship itself, the Dark Star itself, is, like, falling apart. They live under ridiculous conditions. Their mission is so ridiculous.
Right.
It's just sort of, like, dealing with the absurdity of science fiction and then dealing with the absurdity of humanity.
The very beginning of the film, the first thing we see is a transmission from Earth to them. And it's got that military, which is a big thing you see also in Return of the Living Dead, a criticism of the military, right? So this is a Dan O'Bannon thing, which would be a hippie thing too, right? Criticism of the military. It's this military guy who's like, you boys are doing a great job up there. We're so proud of you. Anyway, we got your request to ask for whatever dampeners because of your radiation leak. That was denied. Sorry.
Yep.
I'm sure your boys will do, you'll be all right. Anyway, we'll talk to you. So they need this thing to live and they're denying it. But he's also like congratulating them. Like, you guys are doing such a great job.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, Dan O'Bannon was like a teenager and in his early 20s, right in the 60s, you know?
Right.
And so, like, obviously that's going to affect his political view. And I actually really love that clip with the military guy because he says something like, oh, you know, footage from your mission has made it to the screens here or whatever. And, you know, there was definitely some like high ratings, as in like, that's like something to be proud of, even though they're flying through space and blowing up planets.
Yeah.
Like, they're changing the universe, but like they're thinking about ratings. Like, that would be the most exciting thing about their mission is like, oh, a lot of people watched you on TV. You know, I think that's such a, like, an absurd thing, you know?
Yeah. Like, right now I'm reading Dungeon Crawler Carl, which is, like, I'm only on the second book of, like, 900 books, and they're all, like, 900 pages long. But that's a big thing in that, which is, like, everything is, all of the adventures are being broadcast. So you're constantly hearing about, like, oh, that scene that you read before, like, that got high ratings. It's just, he's got his finger on, you know, the pulse of, like, how shitty things are and how shitty things will get. But it's interesting because, like, there's dystopian, which is like the world is a complete nightmare, like Mad Max, right? And we don't know what Earth is like in this point, but, in this movie. But this is different from dystopian. This is more like how shitty life is now. It's probably going to continue to be that shitty.
Yes.
And you will continue to be exploited by your employer.
Yeah. Right. There's so many different, like, little notes that are just, they're kind of just said almost as, like, in passing, and they're not a big deal. Like, it's not a crisis that their commander died. It's not a crisis that, like, there's parts of the ship where, you know, I mean, like, the ship is irradiated and, you know, there's no toilet paper on the ship.
There's all these
things that, like, if you think about being in space, you'd be like, this is a nightmare. But they kind of just say it as if, like, it's an offhand thing. Like, oh, you know, well, there's no toilet paper and the commander's dead. And, you know, I used to sit next to the commander and I'm a little nervous about, like, the fact that he died right there.
Because his chair got electrocuted.
Right.
And the fact that everything's falling apart is absolutely a big thing. Like, originally they had, like, their own sleeping quarters, but that exploded. So now they all live together in, like, this one little room that looks like a dorm. It's got, like porn on the, from magazines on the wall and stuff.
Yeah.
It just seems like, if you imagine living there, you'd be like, this sounds hard. Like, the claustrophobia of it just sounds terrible.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I think that's kind of the whole point of the movie is just, like, this is this nightmare in hell. I mean, nightmare in space, but they're just like so chill and like desensitized to it. And I mean, like, you know, not to jump around or anything like that, but there is this sort of like deeper, like, psychological effect to all this. Like you said before, there was three guys on the ship. There's actually four guys on the ship, because there's a guy that's up in like crow's nest of the ship where he's like sitting.
Oh yes, Talby. Yes,
Talby, right? And so like he's this sort of like Apocalypse Now kind of character that's like seen it all, and you know, has sort of lost his mind. He's just always isolated and staring into space. The commander, the guy who takes over after the commander dies, Lieutenant Doolittle, at one point they're trying to remember Talby's first name. They can't remember it. And then he goes, wait, what's my name? Yes. And so like you can see like psychologically how it's messing them up so much. There's another part where Dan O'Bannon like looks over his video diary. And like, this is a good example of that absurdity of it in this kind of like almost like childish humor, because he's got this thing that looks like a fucking Nintendo cartridge. And then like in like paint, it just says like video diary, and it looks like a elementary school kid wrote it.
Yeah. No, I wanted to get to this because I think feel like this is a really interesting thread.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, he's sitting there and he watches different segments of his diary. And of course, there's like all these things that like you see them in science fiction movies, like they're tropes. And so I'm assuming that there's a ton of this in science fiction literature. But like, you know, one of the tropes is you have a person on a ship, and this doesn't even have to be sci-fi. This could be like people that are on like a vessel like in the 1800s or something, but it's like, oh, this guy's on the crew, but he's actually a person pretending to be another person,
right?
Because Dan O'Bannon's character in the movie is Pinback, and then he's like, I'm not even Pinback, I'm this other guy. Like, he reveals that in his diary, you know?
Right. But as the diary goes on, right, because it's like a montage, so as the diary goes on, he like becomes Pinback.
Right, exactly. So like that unto itself is a trope in science fiction, where it's like, oh, we're on this mission with someone. Like Alien is even kind of like that too, right, with Ash, because nobody knows that Ash is an android, and he's just accepted and part of the crew. And then it's like, oh my god, we've been living with this android. So like this idea of we're in space, we're so far removed from everyone, and then this person's not who they say they are, that's a thing, you know. And then like Talby, like I kind of, when the movie ends, I'm not going to go into the ending yet, but like his ending kind of matches what you would expect for that kind of character.
Yes.
Where, you know, so like there's like tropes abound in this movie. But like the moments where you're like, oh, okay, I see where this is going, they were thinking about this, those moments are like few and far between. And then otherwise the rest of the movie almost feels like skits, you know?
Right. But actually, we could talk about the end, because you know, I was saying to you earlier this week, like, I used to do the podcast by, like, going through beat by beat. And I know some podcasts do that.
Yeah.
But unless the specific, like, I just feel like you've watched it. Like, I don't know. I don't see a lot of value in it anymore.
Yeah.
So we could go all over. I actually think the end was less of a bummer than I thought it was.
Yeah.
So, what do I want to pick up on? Talby, who apparently the actor who played him had a very thick accent, so he was redubbed by John Carpenter.
Right, right.
He says after Powell died, the commander died, he stays up there. And there's a really good scene between him and Doolittle.
Yep.
Who's like the person who's taken over command. And they're talking, and he's like, why are you always up here? And he's like, I don't like to go back down since he died. And, you know, I just like watching the universe. And then he starts talking about the Phoenix
asteroids.
The Phoenix asteroids. And they're all the colors of the rainbow. And we should be coming across them. So it's interesting because he's obviously like lost his mind. But also he seems to have like almost a childlike innocence.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that he's decided to like basically just live in space as much as that's possible is really interesting. And then the Doolittle was talking about how like, and this is funny too, like he's talking about how he misses home, but he's not talking about like his family or anything. He's like, oh yeah, I really used to love to surf.
Right.
I wish I had my surfboard, you know, even if I could just wax it.
Yeah.
No,
I like Doolittle because I almost feel like he's like a proto Dallas from Alien, where he's this very like calm, we're okay, I'm in command, I'm going to make this work kind of guy, even though they're facing all this ridiculous stuff, right? Because it's funny. I didn't know if the characters are all going to die. I kind of assumed, I was like, oh, probably they're all going to die by the end of this movie. Right. But there's like so many scenes throughout this movie where like, oh, okay, this character's going to die right here. Okay, Dan O'Bannon's going to get killed by the alien. Oh, he's going to get killed in the elevator shaft. Oh, Talby's going to die right now. Right. He's like investigating. And nobody dies until the very end. And then the way that each of them die is kind of like poetic or beautiful, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Dan O'Bannon is the voice of the bomb, too.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's kind of funny he's having like this conversation. I mean, he doesn't really have the big conversation with the bomb. That's Doolittle at the very end. And it's so funny because it's all about, I mean, that's very relative to like what we're talking about now. Because, you know, you're having a conversation with artificial intelligence and they're having this like philosophical debate with a sentient bomb. And it's like, you know, that's ridiculous. Like, could you just picture them just all just fucking get high in a living room?
Yes, of course. Like,
oh man, what if the bomb can talk? And like,
yeah,
you know, what if the bomb starts questioning reality? Like, I could absolutely picture that.
Yeah. You know, like, so these guys are supposed to have been in space for a long time. They say 20 years, but they've only aged 3 years.
Yes.
But at one point, they're talking about something that happened 4 years ago. So I don't know if they've, if it feels like 3 years to them or it feels like 20 years to them, but they've just aged, their bodies only aged that amount of time.
Yeah, I would kind of treat it like they have been doing this for like 20 years.
Yeah, especially
the way they perceive it, but that physically they're aging 3 years.
Especially because of the way that their personhood, when I was in grad school, I got super into like postmodernism, but like the like not like the way that we talk about it now, but like the original like theory of postmodernism. And one of the big things about it was like in a postmodern age, you lose personhood, you lose your subjectivity. You know, you become like a cracked subject. I mean, that's what happens. You see that with the idea of Pinback, who wasn't really Pinback, but then kind of became him. And, you know, Doolittle be like, what's my name?
Right.
But also Doolittle has a lot of moments like that where like he's still doing his job, but he doesn't give a shit. Like there's a moment, I think when he's talking to Talby, where they're like, hey, there's a malfunction. We should like figure out what it is. And he goes, we'll figure it out when it goes bad.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He really has like a, I don't give a shit. And Pinback is like the nice one, you know. He's like trying to entertain the others with like really shitty like shtick, like a rubber chicken and stuff. Right, and he finds a new star and he's like, let's name the star. And Doolittle's like, you're wasting my time. And then he's like all mad that he doesn't want to name the star.
Right. it's funny though because like. He's trying to be nice, and he does these little, like, practical jokes and stuff, but he also kind of comes off as a creep. And, I mean, like, really hard to sort of dissect this movie on a philosophical level because it really just seems like, okay, we're going to have this alien at one point, and it's going to chase him around, and it's going to seem like it's going to kill him. Like,
I mean, that's very slapstick. The comedy of that is so different from, like, the bigger comedy of, like, nothing matters or you know how insignificant you are.
Yeah. So you got to wonder, like, did they throw that in there? Because here's the thing, the movie was made from 1970 to 1972, so like they're just like focusing on this for years.
I think they definitely at some point there was a decision that we're doing such a good job, we should try to make this into a real movie. And I think at that point they tried to extend it.
You can feel
that a little bit.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, there's these little skits. Like, there's this one part. There's another guy that's on the crew. We haven't mentioned him yet, but his name's Boiler. And I thought that, like, that was John Carpenter at first because he kind of looks like him. But then once he started talking, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's not John Carpenter.
Right. And, well, they all have beard. They all have long hair, which I guess is supposed to be, like, them in space, but also makes them all look like hippies.
Yes. Right. And, I mean, yeah, they're obviously, like, playing against type. Like, they're, you know, they're not these, like, clean-cut astronauts. They're these, you know, hippie looking nihilistic guys in space. But like there's one part where like the guy Boiler has this like big laser and he's just like trying to shoot it for target practice just out of boredom.
Yeah.
And you think that there's going to be some significance because they talk about using that laser to like shoot the bomb off the ship. But like, and also like, I just want to talk about how the fact that the movie just kind of feels like it just keeps going at the very end.
Yeah.
Like, there's a few moments where you're like, oh, okay, that's the end of the movie. Like, at one point, the fucking ship blows up, you know, because the bomb does destroy itself.
Right.
And the screen just goes to white. And you're like, oh, okay, that's the end of the movie. They're going to show credits. But then it just keeps going.
I know.
There's like at least like four parts where it could have like ended, you know?
Yes, I agree. Oh, well, so let's talk about the computer, because this is something that's very big in Alien, right?
Yeah.
There is a computer in this that speaks. And I think I'm trying to remember if that's in the original Star Trek or not.
Yes, absolutely. With Kirk and Spock, the computer speaks too.
Yes. Okay. So, and it's got its own little room that has all these crazy lights, which again, that's Mother's room in Alien.
Yeah.
And the idea that this computer is like tasked at taking care of everything.
Yeah.
Although in this, like, there's a screen with like these images on it or these like symbols on it, but like it kind of looks like a face.
Yeah.
So it's like a funny version of the Mother idea.
Yeah.
Where in Alien, the thing that eventually happens with Mother is you find out that Mother has been withholding important information.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, the computer doesn't seem like it's a bad guy.
No.
But the sentient bomb does.
Yeah. Yeah. The computer in this, it's voiced by a woman, and she kind of shows compassion. Like, you know, she's sort of like, oh, this is going to be a problem. Or like, you know, I feel sorry about this. Like, she says things like that to them. Whereas Mother is very like cold and matter of fact.
Right.
You know?
And she kind of has a little bit of like a sexy voice in this.
Yes.
Which I think is funny.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk a little bit about the bomb. So we talked about it before. Like the bomb, when we first see them blow up their first planet, the bomb comes out from below almost like it would like on like a fighter jet.
Yeah.
It comes out, and then the job of Pinback is, well, it's one of his tasks. He's like on a headphone. He's like, hi, bomb. And he talks about it like it's a person that's ready to like go. And then he goes, okay, go. And then he goes and he blows up the planet. And at one point they hit a like asteroid field, which is again for like students making this stuff. It's like pretty, it's not believable effects, but it's interesting looking effects. And they also do this thing where while they're in it, like, they keep freezing inside, like almost like still photographs, but it'll be like all blue or all green or all red.
Yeah.
And anyway, that creates going through that thing creates a problem, a malfunction, and the malfunction is the what do you call it? The bomb. Well, the first malfunction is the bomb thinks it's been told to go out, so the bomb gets ready, and then the computer argues with it. And the computer's like, no, go back up. And he's like, no, I got the order to arm myself, and I've got to follow my order, which is great, right? Because it's just like it's a cog in the machine, like they're cogs in the machine. Like the bomb doesn't want to destroy anything. The bomb doesn't have feelings like that. The bomb is just like, I have a job, and even though it was an accident that I was ordered to do this, I still have to do it.
Right.
Which again gets into like the sort of comical meaninglessness of work. Like, I mean, anyone who has a job knows that there's like, depending on the job you have, like a good 20 to maybe even 60% of your job that's like, this is not doing anything. Like, I'm just I'm not helping anyone in any way with this. This is just like the bullshit part of my job where I'm just doing it because I'm told to do it.
Uh-huh.
And then a little later, it comes out again and the computer's like, hey, you know, another false alarm. We're not ready to use you. And then he's like, well, I'm not going back. And then she has to convince him. And he's like, okay, this is the last time, which sets up the big ending, which is it comes out and it's like, but it can't, the mechanism that drops it like a fighter bomb, like a fighter jet would drop it. That mechanism is fucked up. So like, if it explodes, it's going to explode the ship because it's not releasing.
Right.
And it's almost like mad now. It's like, I'm not going to disarm myself.
Yeah.
They have to talk to it. And then this comes into, I think the most interesting scene in the movie, both visually, thematically, philosophically, which is Doolittle's like, you know what? I have to talk to Commander Powell. And throughout this movie, we've heard multiple times Commander Powell died. Commander Powell is dead. So he goes into this room and there's this little like trap door on the floor and he opens it up and in it is a guy who's like, he's like looking upwards, a lot like the tar man in the Nioxin, whatever, barrel in Return of the Living Dead. He's like looking upwards and he's frozen and he's got like electrodes to his head. And then he, Doolittle picks up a microphone and he starts talking to it. And you hear a voice, but you don't see his lips move. So it's like, is it his consciousness? Like, is he dead? Is he not? Is he in between?
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting to think about.
Yep.
And also, like, the fact that he's almost, like, transcended. Because the ship is, like, he's like, hey, we're in real trouble. What should I do? The bomb won't disarm itself, and we can't release it. And then he's just like, oh, I have a... And he also speaks with his very, like, subtle voice, soft voice. He's like, I have a question for you. How are the Dodgers doing?
Right.
And he's like, I don't know, like, the ship's going to explode. He's like, oh, yeah. And then he says, a couple times he says, like, oh, what does he say? He says, like, I forget a lot of things here, which is like, where's here? What did you think of that scene?
Okay, well, that's really intriguing to me because when you go to look up this movie online, like, see where it's streaming, that's the image they use. They use the cryogenically frozen Commander Powell as the image. And I think that that's all about marketing. I think it's like, okay, if you've heard of this movie, you know that it's John Carpenter's first movie. Maybe you even know about Dan O'Bannon. And you know that Dan O'Bannon's done Return of the Living Dead. And, you know, he's connected to Alien. So we're going to market this movie almost like it's like this space horror thing. Because the imagery, if you look at it just by itself, you could see it and be like, oh, is this a horror thing? And
that's
and especially
true.
Because the title's Dark Star, you know? So, like, it's just like one more extension of this sort of, you know, we keep using the term nihilistic, but like, you know, this kind of bleak concept, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, the guy fucking died, but he's still being used as a resource, which is like really bleak. And I really like that you brought up the bullshit and the minutia of our jobs, because that is like kind of the whole point of the movie is when you're working for a place based on the leadership, you just essentially keep like encountering problems and things break down more and more and things get worse and worse. And you just kind of tolerate it because you need it to survive. These guys need to survive on this ship. And then I'm guessing like economically, they need to like keep their jobs. And but you just like, you put up with stuff that like a regular person would be like, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to work in these situations, like with these conditions. But like the whole movie is just like, things are so absurdly ridiculous. And they just keep going forward with it.
Yeah. Did you get a feeling from this movie of like, it made you feel sad or it made you feel happy? Like, it's one of these things where it's like, oh, everything's meaningless. But it didn't make me feel sad. It almost like made me feel better about life. Cause it's like, yes, it is all stupid and ridiculous, but like, whatever, don't take it seriously.
Yeah, you know, like George Carlin would be sort of like around at this time and have like some significance. And like Pinback, like they even kind of look like George Carlin.
That's
from
true.
This era, you know? And so like George Carlin is like very famous for just like joking about how he doesn't care if like humanity gets wiped out. You know, like if we all die, it's this like sense of humor of like, yeah, the world's fucked. Like humanity sucks. And like, who cares? Let's laugh about it. That's what I feel like the movie's like. And so you watch it now, and like I said, they're almost always dying in this movie. Yeah. But you're not like, oh no, they're gonna die. You're just sort of like just laughing along, you know?
Yeah. So what Commander Powell says is, talk to the bomb about phenomenology.
Yeah,
which I then Googled it, what phenomenology is. Phenomenology is a philosophical movement that investigates and describes the nature of consciousness, subjective experience, and the first-person point of view.
Yeah.
So Doolittle takes that advice. He puts on his what they call star suit in this, and he goes out, and he's like floating outside, and he's like he's one-on-one looking at the bomb and talking to it. I would say even though the bomb has a consciousness, it doesn't look humanoid in any way. It just looks like a bomb.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is he's the advice is to do that as a way of almost like making it come to a feeling of the way they feel. Like,
yes.
make it think about existence so much that it gives up. There's an episode of, again, going back to the original Star Trek, there's an episode of the original Star Trek that Kirk, I think, it's been a few years since I watched the original Star Trek, but he defeats some sort of thinking machine this way by making it question itself. So he's like, how do you know, like, why are you doing this? Well, because I was told, how do you know that data is true? It could be false data.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, what you could be telling me false data. And he's like, yeah, sure, but you don't know. That's the thing, you don't know. And he's like, your sole purpose is to explode, right? But if you are told to explode and you don't know if that's true, he's basically trying to say to the bomb, your existence is meaningless. Like, you think it has meaning because you're given a task, but the rest of us have been given a task and we've come to the realization that everything's fucking meaningless. And he's like, he's trying to get it to that place of feeling that way so it'll disarm itself. Because it can. It can disarm itself and not blow them up. And that's what they're trying to get it to do, but it kind of won't. Although at one point there's a false, like, victory where he says, like, I have to think about this, and then the bomb goes back up. And they think that they've won. And then, you know, a few scenes later, Doolittle's like, oh, you know, I can't go around the back of the ship. Can you just open the airlock? And they open the airlock that has Talby in it, and Talby just flies out, which is pretty funny. They actually do really funny things with, like, speed in this. Like, there's a couple times where the ship just stops on a dime, like as if it's like a car stop. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And but then Pinback's talking to the bomb, and he's like, I forget what he says to it. And then the bomb call, he goes, you are false data. Which is funny because it makes me think about when people say fake news now.
Yeah.
The bomb's like, you're false data. and then eventually the bomb just rearms itself. And then it explodes. And then the two, Boiler and Pinback, die in the explosion. Commander Powell, you see, like, a block of ice, like, flying in a direction, and you hear the voice too. So again, it's like, what is it saying that our consciousness lives past death? It's just really interesting to just think about that whole scene.
So, like, what excites me about all this, right, is that this movie came out in 1974, so it's 52 years old at this point, right? Everything that you're talking about is stuff that, like, I just see on YouTube every single day. YouTube, TikTok, whatever, any kind of, like, I'm on a website or an app, this kind of stuff is what I'm usually exposed to. And it's like the idea of, okay, well, reality is based on our senses, and, well, what if, like, what you're perceiving is skewed because of your senses, and, like, you know, what if this is all simulation? There's always fucking talk about simulation. Yes. All these sort of, like, people that think, like, you know, in, like, a new age, or, like, you know, they're thinking outside the bubble. They're always like, we're at the Matrix. This is the Matrix, like, over and over again. And it kind of excited me watching this movie, because I'm thinking, like, oh, they're thinking about this stuff in 1972. They're thinking about this stuff. And, you know, they're talking about artificial intelligence. Now, what's exciting about this is that nowadays, like, I just say AI or artificial intelligence, and I bet, like, you're not physically rolling your eyes, but you're probably just like, oh, God, this fucking shit. Like, I don't want to fucking hear about artificial intelligence again. And guess what? I don't want to fucking talk about artificial intelligence. Right. But what's exciting is that they're writing with, like, this knowledge of sci-fi movies and sci-fi books. And when people were speculating with science fiction back in the day, they were just like, oh yeah, artificial intelligence, robots, they're going to just be a part of our life. And now we're at this point where we are experiencing that, where we're like, oh, we're in that future.
Right.
But it's like very similar to this movie. It's very similar to Alien. It's very similar to Blade Runner, which, like, Dan O'Bannon and this movie kind of have an influence on Blade Runner, which we could go into, you know?
Sure.
But, like, We're living in this sort of, like, Philip K. Dick, you know, what is reality existence? And it's like, it's crazy to, like, be living in it. Then the characters in this movie and like the way the movie's written, It's just like, oh yeah, this is yeah. There's AI. There's talking bombs. There's spaceships. There's hyper. You know, but like we're kind of in that now, and it's just like so exciting to see that like this has always been the case. Like it's always been the case that like we're having these philosophical debates, and that like regardless of how much we like ponder the universe and think deeply on things, people are just going to use these things for profit and expansion. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it. And it's heartening. I think it's heartening when you, cause it's so easy to be like, oh God, we live in the worst time. And, it is good to be like, yeah, there are other times that people thought these ways and felt these ways.
Yeah. But I mean, like now talking about like, how, you know, because we want to put up the front that we're like optimistic and stuff, right? But if I start saying like, oh man, life really sucks, and look, AI sucks and stuff, it's kind of like, you know, you're at like a party and everyone's like, you want to have an orgy, and like people start getting naked, and you're like, yeah, like it's exciting to like talk about this stuff where you're like, oh yeah, no, things really do fucking suck. Oh yeah, we have a platform, let's fucking talk about this.
Yeah,
but like I think this is the difference. This is the sad difference. Is that we're just people experiencing it like in real time. So it's a part of our life. Whereas like Carpenter and O'Bannon and like people from that time and science fiction writers, they were like speculating about this stuff. They're like, this stuff is going to happen one day. We're just like, oh yeah, it's Tuesday. Fucking right. AI and corporations are destroying the planet, you know?
Well, I mean, one thing that I think has happened is like the way we always thought about AI was a being, a artificial being. And now when we talk about it, what we're mostly talking about is documents, false documents being made that convince us of reality. Like AI videos, AI sound, AI used to call up an old lady and convince her to give them money for bail, saying it's their grandson or whatever. So, you know, we despite talking about AI, like we don't have, I mean, supposedly they do exist. I mean, I shouldn't say supposedly they do exist, but it's not a problem the way the real problem with AI currently, like on a day-to-day level, is like you'll see something and be like, oh, that's a cool video. Oh, wait, no, it's AI. Never mind.
Right.
We don't yet have like a neighbor who moves in and it's like, oh, wait, I found out the neighbor's AI. And it's like,
there goes the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
So no, I mean, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to... Yeah, go on.
You do it. You do it.
No, I would just wanted to make two little points, which was I forgot to say that when they are talking to the bomb says, I think, therefore I am, which is from the philosopher René Descartes, which is dualism, the idea of like, I know I have consciousness because I can even question the idea of consciousness. Like if you can ask yourself, do I have consciousness? That means you have consciousness. That's what I think the therefore is, right? Which is really cognito ergo sum, right?
Yes.
So it's interesting that like, yes, there is this scene with like a big beach ball that's painted with like dots and has like weird feet is in it. But then like the movie does get into like philosophical shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like, I didn't want to like hijack your show and stuff like that. And I was thinking about like your listeners where they're like, oh God, Peter Marsh is on the show. They're going to try to be all philosophical. Like, why can't they fucking talk about Gilmore Girls again? You know? And so like, I'm telling you, man, like if you ever watched the documentary, The 70s, A Decade Under the Influence, have you ever seen that?
I think I have. Yeah.
Yeah. It's by Ridley Scott's, brother, the one who died, like Tony Scott, right?
Tony Scott.
Yeah. He made it. And it's this like fucking amazing fucking documentary about how important the 70s were and like what was going on behind the scenes that led to these 70s films, which, you know, many people that love film would say the 70s are the best.
Yeah.
Is the best era. And this movie is right at the beginning of it, right?
Yeah.
Like when you think about the way that these people were thinking and what they were focusing on, it's like super exciting stuff. Because they're allowed to like push boundaries, they're allowed to kind of think outside of the box. Like the Hollywood was struggling before the 70s, and so they gave a lot of creative freedom to people like John Carpenter. And you had this whole new generation of filmmakers that went to film school. Like they were like the first group to go to film school for the first time. And, you have like John Carpenter and Francis Ford. I mean, Francis Ford Coppola is kind of a different generation, sort of, but you have like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, right. You know, and you just think like, wouldn't it be fucking amazing to just be a fly on the wall, like in one of their parties and stuff where they're all just like hanging out and talking about things.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And they're just, and like, okay. Like I didn't want to like hijack it, but you know, and now I'm getting like Danny where I'm just fucking talking the whole time. But like, I really wanted to get this out there, which is that Dan O'Bannon, he meets, Ron Shusett, who's the guy that co-writes Alien with him. Now he meets him and they talk about the fact that Ron Shusett has the rights to make Total Recall into a movie, right?
Based on it's a Philip called K. Dick
We Remember
story.
You Wholesale is the book, but like it becomes Total Recall, yeah. Right? And anyway, like Dan O'Bannon, between like Dark Star and making Alien, mm-hmm. he goes to Europe because Jodorowsky right. is making Dune, and he hires Dan O'Bannon to like work on the special effects of Dune. And while he's in Europe, like for months and months and months, like on this movie that's not really getting off the ground, he meets H.R. Giger, you know?
Yeah.
And not only that, like he meets another production design guy who like would go on to like do the production of Alien, where he like developed the ships and stuff.
Right.
Like Giger obviously did like the creature and like the alien stuff, but then another guy did like the space stuff. And like to me, it just blows my mind that this one dude is like involved in the making of Alien and Total Recall, you know, and like the stuff from Jodorowsky's Dune was so influential on Blade Runner, you know?
Yeah.
And we fucking live in Blade Runner now, you know?
No, it's true. It's true. Yeah, and you know, if we keep going with this, I'd love to talk about Total Recall. Because I think that might be the last, like, big thing that O'Bannon was involved in.
Yeah.
He died in 2006 or 7?
Yeah, it's been a while now that he hasn't been around. That sounds right.
But he wasn't that old, right, when he died, I think?
No. Maybe, like, 60s or, yeah.
Okay. I should say for listeners, if you enjoy this episode, a lot of what we've talked about is touched on other episodes of PCMC. Me and Peter did an episode on Jodorowsky's Dune. I've done episodes on John Carpenter's Halloween. I did an episode on John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness. Trying to think what else we've touched on. A lot of this stuff is stuff we've talked about before. Oh, of course, me and Peter did an episode on the 1987 Masters Universe, which I think takes a lot from the production design of Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yes.
Steals a lot from the production design of Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yeah. Like, Jodorowsky's Dune was such an event and a non-event at the same time that, like, like they had to make a documentary about it. Like, and the documentary was very popular to where, like, they're like, oh, my God, look how much this movie that never got made essentially affected our culture.
And what's interesting is the documentary is called Jodorowsky's Dune. So it's almost like it exists because people be like, oh, that's some Jodorowsky's Dune. It's like the idea. It's like the documentary incepted the movie into our brains.
Yes. I think that's fucking amazing. But it's just like, I don't know about you, but like there's so much relevance for my life with this stuff because Alien is so important to me and influential on me. And, you know, like I feel like Return of the Living Dead has always been like in my life. I just actually watched it for the first time like a month ago. You know, and, you know, the Philip K. Dick stuff, the fact that like O'Bannon is friends with the guy that has the Total Recall rights. He writes Total Recall and Blade Runner is sort of like inspired by all this. Like this is like very important stuff to me. This is why I wanted to do Dan O'Bannon stuff with you.
Yeah. And, I want to speak again, going back to other episodes of PCMC, I did an episode called Our Favorite Nudity. In movies or our favorite nudity in pop culture. And on my list was Linnea Quigley from Return of the Living Dead. I think the best nudity, one of the best nudities in any movie ever.
Totally agree with you on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Linnea Quigley was she the one who thought he was creepy? Linnea Quigley?
She was not.
Okay.
But it's funny because the woman that they were going to hire for Trash was a stripper. That's the one I was talking about before.
Okay.
But then she was pregnant and then she couldn't film the movie because she was pregnant.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Linnea Quigley was married to, what's his name, Johnson, who was the special effects guy who did Slimer from Ghostbusters. So it's all related. It's all related. So we'll wrap it up. I just want to say that I think we haven't talked about the end. The end is kind of very, I think, positive. Talby gets taken away by the Phoenix asteroid and will travel around existence forever. And Doolittle finds a piece of debris of the ship and uses it as a safe surfboard and surfs down into the planet. He will die when he reaches the atmosphere and burn up, but at least he's going out in a blaze of glory.
Yes.
As we will.
Yes. Yeah, and I love it because, like, when the movie finally starts, they actually don't start the credits until pretty late into the movie, which I think is sort of uncommon for that time.
Yeah.
And then in the opening credits and at the very end of the movie, they play the song where it's like, Benson, Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just showing him, like, surfing in his space suit. And I'm like, oh, this is perfect. I love this.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Peter, thank you so much for being here. It's always a pleasure to have you and your insight. What's going on your channels?
Oh, dude, I love when you ask this part. yeah, on the LasserCast, they just released a new Insidious movie. So there's actually six of these movies.
And a Broadway show. Danny and I that's Paranormal Activity. My mistake.
Yeah, yeah. But with Insidious, there's six of them. And so Danny and I are going to cover like two at a time.
Oh, wow.
So we have a review like this week. But probably by the time your episode gets released, these will already be out. But we're like covering the whole franchise. And then, you know, we covered The Vampire Lestat. That was sort of our big thing in the past couple of months, which that show, I just really thoroughly enjoyed that show. That's on the LasserCast, which you can get on Spotify. And also you can see us on YouTube. And then also on Comic Books Transformed, there's actually quite a few things to talk about. Brian and I covered Spider-Man Brand New Day, which is sort of the big thing a couple of weeks ago. But now we're covering Batman the Caped Crusader, which is on Amazon Prime. Yeah. And we're almost done with that. And then Lanterns is on HBO. And so far, as of this recording, there's been two episodes.
So
we pretty much covered every week.
Lanterns is so fucking good.
Yes.
Peter, thank you so much for being here. We'll be back next week to talk about some more Dan O'Bannon. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.